All
right. Here we go. Welcome back to Beyond the Pale on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Jesse Meyerson, filling in for Alex Kane, here with my co-host Lizzie Ratner. Alex Kane joins us now from Israel, where he has been covering President Obama's trip to Israel, and that is what we're going to talk about. Alex, so good to have you on your own show.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. You've been writing for Mondo Weiss while you've been here, and I'd encourage the listeners to check out Mondo Weiss for Alex's work. I wanted to, before we get to President Obama's speech, big speech in Jerusalem to primarily a group of students, I wanted to just ask, you've been covering not just the official state visit, but also some protests, particularly a protest at Ofer Prison where hunger striker Samer Issawi is being held. I wanted you to just talk briefly about that and how the confrontation between Israeli military forces and Palestinian civilians is sort of a dark shadow continues to take place at this time of sort of official state friendship between the U.S. and Israel.
That's right. Well, there have been a number of protests. One in Ramallah, which was not a face-off with the Israeli military, because the Israeli military does not patrol inside Ramallah. That's left to the Western-trained Palestinian Authority security forces. But that same day, there was a protest outside Ofer Prison in support of Samer Issawi. Issawi is a hunger-striking prisoner. He was released as part of the Gilad Shalit deal, but was re-arrested about 9 months later. And he's been on hunger strike and protests of being held on secret evidence that Israel won't show. And he's part of a wave of hunger strikers within Israeli jails that has really galvanized some pretty big protests in the West Bank, the biggest that they've seen in a while, although it's definitely not leading to any huge sustained uprising. That's not really in the cards for Palestinians now. But, on the same day that Obama spoke to Israeli youth in Jerusalem, there were clashes outside Ofer that I reported on. The protest was fairly small, about a little over 100 Palestinians there, but this is a part of Palestinian life that President Obama did not really touch on. He briefly touched on settlements and expulsion of Palestinians, but the tenor of his trip was really very pro-Israel and pandering to Israel, and as well as the lobby back in the U.S. But outside Ofer, there were continuous clashes for hours in support of Samer Issawi. Many Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine flags were around because Issawi is a member of the DFLP, which is a leftist Palestinian political faction. And the way the clashes go is that, the Israeli military is shooting tear gas from a hill, and, the youth of Palestine kind of go up as close as they can get, and they throw stones at the Israeli soldiers, and the Israeli soldiers respond with more rounds of tear gas and rubber bullets. There were a couple of injuries, although nothing too serious at Ofer. But you're right that this is a part of Palestinian life that Obama did not really mention, and Obama briefly mentioned, I'm sure we'll get to this more, but he briefly mentioned, the indignities that Palestinians have to suffer, but those words really ring hollow, considering the fact that that tear gas that Israel is firing is made in the U.S. and paid for with U.S. tax dollars.
Right. Well, let me play devil's advocate for just a moment. First, let me read you something from a diary by Gideon Levy, who writes about the occupation a lot at Haaretz. The president of the United States, Levy wrote, took a step toward the fundamental value, justice. Now it's Israel's turn to do so. It won't happen immediately. Israeli society is too preoccupied with shallow things, but maybe the seed has been planted. And what this makes me think of is the decision by the president to address Israeli university students. Obviously, university students in the U.S. are a sort of a major base of support for the president, and it mirrors the group of people that he elected to speak to in Cairo a few years back. There's debate about whether that had a stimulative effect on the revolutionary fervor that brought down Hosni Mubarak. He also, in his speech, mentioned some young Palestinian people who he had met who reminded him, he said, of his daughters. And he said that if Israeli parents were to meet these Palestinian young people, they would want the best for them. He was confident in that. He explored the youth through this metaphor that he's used before of the Moses generation, which in this case meant Israel's founding generation, which is now in its twilight, and then the Joshua generation, which is supposed to sort of carry on the passage toward the Promised Land. And I sort of wanted to ask you about the decision to speak to the young people, and whether you consider that, as Gideon Levy seems to, a sort of investment in a generation that, as it ascends to political power, can have in its consciousness a different formulation for understanding the Palestinian crisis.
That was certainly the intention of Barack Obama, and I got to say that the brief remarks he made about Palestinians to the Israeli youth were generally decent. I wouldn't call them good or great, but they were better than the rest of his remarks on the trip. And, you know, it's clear that his speech to the Israeli youth was a way to skirt around speaking to a hostile Israeli Knesset, an Israeli Knesset filled with settlers themselves and supporters of settlers mm-hmm. who are going to expand illegal Jewish-only West Bank settlements. But, you know, and there was a lot of applause for Obama in the Jerusalem Convention Center, and you know, that applause came from Israeli youth, and they even applauded when he was talking about the indignities that Palestinians suffer in the occupation.
I confess I was sort of taken aback and moved by how well some of the more impressive moments in the speech played in that hall.
Yeah, it's a little puzzling, honestly. The thing about Israeli youth is that they're not honestly interested in ending the occupation and ending really the system of separate and unequal rules based on ethnicity that Israel has imposed from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. If you look at the polls of Israeli youth, it's not particularly promising. It's unclear whether it was a show to, express their support for Obama coming and, really showing solidarity with Israel, or whether they actually believe that, a two-state solution is really also in their best interest, as Obama said. That's unclear. But if you look at the bigger picture, I don't see Israeli youth, and this is, a pessimistic take. I wish I could be more optimistic, honestly. But, I think the reality of it is that Israeli society as a whole and Israeli youth in general are very comfortable with the status quo. It's a status quo that means continued human rights abuses for Palestinians, but there is no terrorism against Israelis, as Obama recognized in the press conference with Netanyahu the night before. And Israel is very comfortable with what they're doing, and, they're going to continue to expand settlements. There was the Israeli youth movement in 2011, and that did have an effect on the election, and it seems like Yair Lapid, who is no anti-occupation person, he focused on the economy. It seemed like the surge in the polls for Lapid was partly a result of the J14 Israeli social justice movement. But that movement also really ignored the elephant in the room, the occupation. Mm-hmm. I got to be pessimistic and I think realistic about it, although I hope that the Israeli youth in that audience would really think about what Obama said, and it would be great if they pushed their leaders to a more sustainable position. I'm not quite sure if that's going to happen.
Let me give you another opportunity to be pessimistic. It's you know me. I don't put a lot of stock in a two-state solution as a an emerging possibility. But it seems as though if there is to be any sort of revived hope in a so-called peace process, or even any revival of a so-called peace process, it's going to require not just this speech, which may have done a nifty trick 10 or 15 years ago, but continued attention from particularly John Kerry, the new Secretary of State. Do you anticipate this being a priority for Kerry, or do you anticipate, and if it is, do you think that would have much of an effect?
Well, there have been analysts and experts that do say that, you know, in his second term, Obama will give more of a priority to the peace process than his administration had in the last 2 years of administration, which really ignored the whole peace process, Israel-Palestine question after he got beat over the head, you know, after raising the settlement issue. In his first 2 years of his administration. So I think there is a possibility that John Kerry will be actively engaged in this. But, you know, I honestly think the Israeli-Palestinian question, he will be actively engaged, but actively engaged not to the point where it's the priority for Kerry. The priority for Kerry is truly going to be probably Asia and Iran. You know, the Obama administration's Asia pivot is going to continue. And I don't think that real sustained investment in the so-called peace process will be a huge priority. I think it will be somewhat of a priority, but the question is whether that will mean anything. President Obama, you know, encouraged both Israelis and Palestinians to get back to the negotiating table. He didn't say anything about stopping settlements. He just said there should be no preconditions. They should just talk right now. Netanyahu agrees. Netanyahu agrees for a particular reason. You know, the peace process during the Oslo Accords really just saw an expansion in settlements. Mm-hmm. It was really a cover for continued colonization of the West Bank. So, you know, there's all this talk and analysis about whether the peace process will happen. We'll get kickstarted again, you know. And that is an interesting question, but the fact that even if it does, settlements will probably continue to expand means that the peace process does not really matter. And the fact is that actually Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas wants negotiations to happen, but he knows that he can't go back to the table without a settlement freeze from Netanyahu, which is not going to happen, mm-hmm. which would mean really the end of his right-wing coalition, and he's not about to try to go back to elections based on the peace process. That's not really in Netanyahu's calculus.
Right. Let me ask you one final question, since we're short on time. A detail that emerged after Obama's speech is Netanyahu's I don't know if I want to say apology, but acknowledgement of the unfortunate effect, acknowledgement to the Turkish government of the unfortunate incident that unfolded on the Mavi Marmara, which you and I have spoken about before. What's your take on that, on this development?
Well, it was clearly an Obama demand or an Obama push, you know. Israel and Turkey have a number of common interests on, particularly on Syria. You know, Turkey is against the Assad regime, and Israel, you know, is quite worried about the chaotic situation in Syria. The U.S. wants to increase that cooperation between Israel and Turkey, and Turkey is really a strong U.S. ally, and the U.S. was really trying to reconcile those two partners. So, you know, Turkey got what it wanted. It was demanding an apology, and Netanyahu, the news reports say that there may be even compensation to the families of those killed by the Israeli naval forces on the Mavi Marmara. I think the larger ramifications are unclear right now, but I think, you know, the fact that it happened and that Erdogan, the prime minister of Turkey, accepted it means that the sort of reconciliation is in both of their interests. You know, Turkey and Israel have been allies in the past, have military ties, they have trade ties, and so, you know, I think there were political forces in Israel that prevented Netanyahu from doing that, But Obama, you know, came to Israel and didn't really get much from Israel. Although there's some question about, you know, Netanyahu did acknowledge that the United States has Israel's back on Iran, and that, you know, that he would allow the United States time to deal with the Iranian issue. Although there's still Israeli pressure on the U.S. for that. So, you know, this was really a sort of deliverable to Obama as he left, and he can come back to the U.S. with that headline and say, look, you know, I spoke to the Israeli people, I affirmed our unbreakable alliance, and I also, you know, helped with reconciliation between Turkey and Israel, so my trip was successful. So I think that's really fundamentally what it was about, and I think, you know, the larger ramifications will become more clear in the next couple of days.
Alex Kane, writer for Mondowais and an editor at Alternet, thank you so much for joining us. I'm so glad we got to hear from you.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to hang up, get some sleep. See you when you get back, I guess.
Awesome. Thanks, thanks so much for doing this.
No doubt. Thank you.
Bye, Alex. And be well.
Bye, Lizzie.
Hi and bye. Sort of. Bye.
Have a good night.
You too.
Have a good day.
You too.
Hopefully I'll see you soon.
Amen. All right. Take care of yourself, Alex. Be well.
Okay.
You bye.
Too. Bye. Sorry, I completely tuned out because I...
Hi, this is Lizzie Ratner on Beyond the Pale on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live at WBAI.org. Before we sign off, which we will do very soon, we're going to go and get down on our knees again. That's right, we're going to get down on our knees and beg. And what we're going to beg you to do is to call the following number, 516-620-3602, and make a contribution to the WBAI Transmitter Fund. As many of our listeners know, we are threatened right now with losing the transmitter that broadcasts the extraordinarily powerful and important words you hear on WBAI every day, every hour. And we cannot afford to lose this transmitter as a station, but more important, as a city that relies on this information to understand what's really happening in our streets, in our neighborhoods, and around the world. So we're asking you right now to get on the phone, call 516-620-3602, and make a contribution to the WBAI Transmitter Fund. Now, there are other ways that you can help us out, ways where you can enjoy yourselves while contributing to the upkeep, the maintenance, the salvation of WBAI. And one of those ways is to come to the WBAI Benefit Dance Party at SOB's on Wednesday, March 27th from 6 to 10 p.m. That's this Wednesday at SOB's, also known as Sounds of Brazil, on the corner of Houston Street and Varick. And this is going to be a fantastic evening, a dance party featuring, it's going to be emceed by Felipe Luciano, and will feature musical performance by Ibrahim Gonzalez y Amigos, Manny Oquendo's Libre, Andy Gonzalez, musical director, Joe Batan, Mauricio Smith Jr., and Chico Alvarez and friends, and a whole bunch of other amazing folks. Tickets are $20. The money goes to help the WBAI Transmitter Fund.
Give, give, give. Your generosity is the only thing that can save us now. And we would really, really appreciate some more time on the air. This was my very first Beyond the Pale episode, and I'm so glad that I got to do it. It was very exciting. I hope that you think that these discussions merit more time on the air, and you will help us secure it. So really, thank you so much for listening, and we really hope that you'll contribute to our extremely urgent fundraising drive.
And that does it for this week's edition of Beyond the Pale here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live at WBAI.org. Be sure to check out our website, Beyond the Pale, that's PALE.org, and stay tuned for Sheldon Walden and Walden's Pond up next.
And happy Pesach. This year, may you and the people you love be filled with redemption. Next year, may there be redemption in Jerusalem.
And let us say Amen.
So long.
Bye.
Excellent. All right.
Wow, dude. I think I found my inner, you know...